be a chumash though. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, this year is really, in a certain sense, independent and separate from our last year. Our last year was a week before Shavuos, but it's a little bit connected. And like the previous year, this is for those I just checked them out. This is our 17th year, hard to believe. That's a lot of shiurim kananar. This is our 17th year, or at least we have 17 source sheets. You know what I mean? If you can't, you know, we can impress people that we learned 17 times. So the last two, if you could close the door for a second. Thank you. The first 15 were of a similar style. I mean, of course, each year different. But again, we were focusing on the text, the basic mafarshim, whether they be Rishonim or Achronim, contemporary mafarshim. But the last two have been completely different, not only because all the sources were English and all the sources were individual books, but the whole style of the last two shurim were different. But again, I thought it was worthwhile. We do try to mix things up in the shir, sometimes more parshanut, sometimes more philosophy. And the last 2 weeks, I think, are really last week and this week, I think you'll see as well, are really a combination. Just to review, we're standing at the precipice of some of the most major discussions, really, of all of Hashkafa, but certainly of all of Parshanut. That is the creation of Adam and Chava as described in Perek Beis of Bereishis. What's so significant about this, of course, is that the story itself is fascinating, intriguing, beyond words. But of course, it's also the contrast between Perek Aleph and Perek Beis. You have a repeated story, which is strange enough, and then you have some crucial differences, which makes the difficulty even more compounded. So we saw individual Mefarshim sensitivities and nuances that dealt with the creation of Adam and Perek Beis three shiurim ago. And then last year, we basically spent time discussing Rav Soloveitchik's approach to synthesizing and explaining how Perek Aleph and Perek Beis really aren't a stira, they aren't contradicting each other, but rather they're complementing each other and describing two different dimensions of man. Not Chas V'Shalom, as so many biblical critics claimed, that Perek Aleph and Perek Beis shows the Torah is written by two authors, but rather that it's describing two different dimensions of man. One was more, we said, you know, the one who's building the bridges and traveling to the moon, which was a good thing. But it wasn't a spiritual or redeemed life. It was conquering the world of nature. And then you have the Adam II, the Adam as described in Perek Beis of Bereishis, which was something which was somewhat more shy, but more introspective and more spiritual. That discussion came from, all those sources came from the Rav's famous essay, which was published first as a magazine article and then as its own book, called The Lonely Man of Faith. However, I mentioned to you last week that there's a new book that came out. In fact, I'm holding it up for you. I get no royalties, but I do encourage you to buy it. It's a wonderful book. It's called Family Redeemed, Essays on Family Relationships. This was the first book. This came out in the year 2000. And it was the first book in a series, all published under the heading of a group called Me'otzar HaRav, which are family members and extended Talmidim of Rav Soloveitchik who are putting together theme-based books of his Hashkafa, of things which have never been published before. Either they're notes that were not published or based on notes of speeches that he gave but had not been published. And they put together things, even though they may overlap other more well-known essays, but I think this has already had five volumes now out, each on a different topic. One of the books actually was letters from a particular period of life. One of the books is on tefillah, a very important book on tefillah. One of the books is on human suffering and evil. Very interesting topics. But this was the first one called Family Redeemed, which is primarily based on essays on Sefer Bereishis, not just Parshas Bereishis, but Sefer Bereishis, all on different family relationships. So I'll just give you a sense for a moment of the table of contents. You'll see exactly what I mean. So he speaks about Adam and Chava, that's our topic, marriage, parenthood, kibud v'mora. In other words, all the different types of relationships that you could possibly have. You know, husband and wife, parents to children, and then children to parents. These are the various essays, again, primarily based, not exclusively, but probably based on essays from Sefer Bereishis. So the particular one, the first essay in the book, which is about Adam and Chava, so I'm just letting you know from the preface, it tells us that this is based on a lecture, it's a few years after Lonely Man of Faith. It was based on a lecture that was given at Stern College for Women on December 22nd, 1971. That is the basic crux of this essay comes from this shiur that he gave at Stern College in 1971. So I assume those who heard the shiur loved it at the time, but no one else knew about it. And then, based on his notes, or maybe they had some tapes, I'm not sure if they had a tape, but they definitely had notes, they reconstructed and made this essay. What is so important about this is you'll see very clearly there's some overlaps and some common ground with Lonely Man of Faith, which shouldn't surprise us. On the other hand, there are some differences, which, if you know Rav Soloveitchik, also shouldn't surprise us. I mentioned actually in Shal Shudas a few weeks ago the name of one of the local Rabbanim here that he mentioned that Rav Weinberg, that Sofer Bnei Yisrael, had a similar persona, and that each time they looked at a topic, whether it be of Chumash or of Gemara, they looked at it afresh. And it was completely and entirely possible that within a matter of years, or even a matter of weeks or days, you could ask them the same question or learn the same piece with them and get two different explanations or two different answers. That's the nature of very often of creative and independent-minded geniuses. And Rav Soloveitchik certainly fit that criteria. So there's definitely some differences and there's definitely some overlap. What is distinctive primarily about this, which really Lonely Man of Faith never even goes into, is that it very much goes into detail of, I think we'll see some very powerful questions that he asks. It's basically one question with three or four different heads on Perek Beis itself. Once he starts asking his questions about Perek Beis, in order to answer the question, he then sets in contrast Perek Beis and Perek Aleph, which is where some of the overlap with last shiur comes in. But then, because he's focusing on different questions, he really has a different approach to Perek Beis. Again, not entirely different, but somewhat different than we saw last week, which not only is interesting for its own vantage point, but also because, I think very beautifully, we'll see in 45 minutes or so if you agree with me, but very beautifully, also not only in general explains the difference between the Perek Aleph and Perek Beis, more importantly, is going to discuss some of the real probing questions that he raises in Perek Beis in and of itself. Okay, so, ad kan introduction, but before we can see the text in the, from Rav Soloveitchik, more importantly, we have to see the text of the Torah. So let's review the basic psukim, which are going to be the basis for today's shiur. And this is again finds us in Perek Beis of Bereishis, where we left off. What's the pasuk we left off with? Of course, famous pasuk, one of the most famous psukim in Torah, Perek Beis, pasuk Zayin, the pasuk of Hashem creating Adam, the yipach ba'apa of Nishmas Chaim, and he blew into Adam the breath of life, and he became a living soul, Nefesh Chaya. Okay? So that was where we had stopped. Two shiurim ago, we discussed that pasuk intently. What does that mean, yipach ba'apa? What does that mean, Nishmas Chaim? Last year we discussed, we stopped there, but went back towards Perek Aleph, and now we're going to have a quick overview of some of the remaining stories of Perek Beis. We'll go back to all these, I hope, in the coming weeks, more in detail, but let's get at what we would call in modern Hebrew, a skira klalit, a general overview of some of the next continuation of the story in Perek Beis, so that we can then analyze it and probe further. So the pasuk continues, the Torah of Perek Beis, pasuk ches. What happens? Again, please note not only everything we're reading, but the sequence. Sequence is going to be the key to the shiur. Okay? Point number one in the sequence of events is Adam has just been born. Adam was just born. Keep in mind the sequence. What is the next thing the Torah tells us? That Hashem planted this garden in paradise. And once the garden is planted, then man is placed there, Asher Yitzhar, that had been created. Yitzmach Hashem Elokim min ha'adama, and then we get more details, not about Adam, but we're now in details of the garden. Hashem has caused to sprout from this ground, kol eitz nechmad l'mareh, beautiful trees to witness, v'tov l'ma'achal, delicious to eat, eitz ha'chayim v'toch ha'gan, two specific trees are singled out, the tree of life, eitz ha'chayim is in the middle of the garden, eitz hadas tov v'ra, as well as this special tree called the eitz hadas, which is described as distinguishing between good and bad. Furthermore, not only are there beautiful and delicious trees in the garden, we're told about various rivers. Because after all, how are you going to irrigate? Right? We don't hear about rain just yet, but how would you have such beautiful, lush trees? Oh, because there's a natural irrigation, it's right next to all these rivers. And I don't want to get into, we'll skip now the details of the psukim, but the psukim then describe these different rivers and their names. Skip now to Pasuk Tes Vav, 15, verse 15. Yikach Hashem Elokim Es Adam. So now that we have this, the Torah repeats, even though it already told us that Hashem had placed Adam, now the Torah repeats and says, man, Hashem took this man, Adam, v'yanichehu b'gan Eden, la'avda u'lashamra. He has a mission. He's not just there to watch. He's not just there to play. He has a job. He's supposed to work and guard and protect this beautiful garden. Yitzav Hashem Elokim al Hadam Lemur. Now we have this command. You know, there's behavioral requirements, not just to work the garden, but you know, we got to be careful here. But Yitzav Hashem Elokim al Hadam. Hashem commands them Lemur, saying, "Mikol Eitz Hagan Achol Tocha. You can eat from everything. Eitz Hadas Tovara Lo Suchal Mimenu. But don't eat from that one tree, the Eitz Hadas. Kibyom Achol Chamimenu Lo Tumas. Something about you, something will die if you do eat it." Again, obviously, I know there's much to discuss about these psukim specifically. We'll have future shurim on that. Now we're just getting an overview of what happened. Again, we haven't read Bereishis in 9 months, so we have to review. Famous psukim, but always worth reviewing nonetheless. Yurches, Vayomer Hashem Elokim. Okay, remember the sequence. Okay, let's review. Adam is created. Then immediately we're told that the garden is created. Man is in the garden. We have descriptions of the garden, all sorts of trees, beautiful trees, rivers, and then we have man's command, work this garden, and specifically, don't eat from the Eitz Hadas. Again, remember, keep in mind sequence, and keep in mind if the sequence makes any sense to you. No? Vayomer Hashem Elokim, Yurchas 18. Hashem says, to who? Probably to himself. It sounds like a declarative, it's the narrator speaking, so to speak. Who's Hashem talking to? Lo tov hayos adam levado. Very famous pasuk. If you've ever been to Shavuot Brachos, perhaps you've heard this. Even if you've never been to Shul, you've all been to Shavuot Brachos. It's not good for man to be alone. Eselo ezer kenegdo. I will create for him this helpmate. And then we're told now the details of the creation of Chava. Yisar Shem Elokim in ha'adama. Excuse me. See, even I got tricked, right? What should we expect after that introduction? The creation of Chava. But what happens? Sequence. We're now told more details about this garden that they're living in. That Hashem created all the animals, Veskolahof, and the birds. And now we have a critical transition, which we've never had in Perek Aleph. Adam is told that he has to name. He gives names to all the animals. Whatever name Adam gives, that will be their name. Right, you're going to be a lion, you're going to be a tiger, and you're going to be a bird, and you're going to be a parrot. Adam gives all the names. But nevertheless, Ula Adam lo Matzer Eza Kenegdo. Like, even though Hashem already told us it's not going to be alone, it almost seems like Adam maybe not have realized that. But then Adam looks around, he's now cataloged and categorized the entire creation, and he realizes there's nobody for me. There's two birds, you know, the birds have a buddy, and the lions have a buddy, but there's nobody for me. He realizes that there's nobody for him. What happens, again, the famous psukim of Yapel Hashem Elokim Kardema. Now Adam finally goes to sleep. Details again. Chava is created, taken from his rib, etc. Then she's given. The whole concept of the word Isha being for the female sex, that comes from the conjugation Kimeish Lukapazos. She's taken from man. And then we're told in general about the future, a man will leave his parents, and he'll get married, and he'll cleave to his wife. And then we're told about the fact, interesting way to end the parak, that they were both naked, but they weren't embarrassed. They had no self-awareness. There was nothing to be embarrassed about at this point in human history. Okay? So a quick review. This is the end of parak phase. Now the key for us now is, again, creation of Adam and what comes next. Let's review. Creation of Adam. Creation of the garden. A detail about all the beautiful, delicious trees in the garden. All the rivers. Then we have the fact, it's like an introductory pasuk, whoa, not good for Adam to be alone. But instead of then creating Chava, what do we have? Naming all the animals. And then we have Adam realizing almost himself that he's lonely, then he goes to sleep, and Chava is created. I already hinted at one, but perhaps you'll know more than that. What, perhaps, questions would you raise based on this sequence of events? What, if anything, surprises you about the sequence?
Well, the fact that Isha was in the later part, Isha should have been right away.
Good. So if you're going to create Adam, should you have created Chava with him? First of all, logically, you would have expected it.
Right.
I think you're right, Harry. But you could compound the question, which is I myself almost got tripped up when I was reading the psukim. Right? First of all, you already have one interruption of the garden, the trees, and the rivers. What's that doing there? But number two, you then almost have like a false start. It's like, you know, like on the news sometimes, right? Like they will tell you, you know, murder in, you know, Pikesville, right? They don't plan on telling you actually the story for 15 minutes. But they leave and lead each one break because then that's how they'll get you. So you have a preview of coming attractions, as we call it, because the Torah tells us how it's not good. Lo tov heyos adam l'vado. But that's not followed with rectifying the loneliness of Adam. But then we go back to naming the animals. How's that going to help him? And only then is Chava created. Very strange.
I think what he wanted to do is maybe the first was Hashem's observation of that
the loneliness
cannot be alone. But I think he interjects. There's an interjection of a pasuk where Adam has to come to that realization on his own.
You're right. I was spelling that out in a certain sense. I was sensing it that as I was reading it. That still doesn't answer the question, though, why you have the whole discussion of the garden and the trees and the creation of the animals to begin with. Because why couldn't all that have happened right away? Let me review. Adam is created, which means we're talking about the sixth day, which means the animals, the birds are already all created. So we don't need to necessarily hear about them again. We certainly didn't need to hear about the trees of the garden. We don't need to hear about how pretty and delicious they are. We don't need to hear about the four rivers. I mean, that's a complete mystery. It's a mystery even to this day, really, what they are. But it's certainly a mystery. But why is it needed then? Why not go from the creation of Adam to, maybe even according to Eli saying, it's not enough. We don't just want, you know, Hashem to give Chava to Adam. Adam should realize it. Okay, let's grant that for a moment. So then what should have happened, even according to that? Adam is created. Adam looks around, realizes he's lonely, and then Chava is created. Right? That would be one basic story. Then you have a separate story about the natural world or environment in which they're inhabiting. So then you want to tell me that the garden looked like this, and the trees looked like this, and there were rivers. But that seems to be a completely separate story. Yet what happens? The psukim, hopscotch, from story 1 to story 2, back to story 1, to story 2, and then conclude again with story 1. Now, perhaps all of us on our own would, one way or another, have perceived this. Perhaps all of our adult lives we've been reading the psukim and been confused. Or perhaps, like so many times in life, something may be obvious only once it's been pointed out to us, but we never realized it. So I don't take credit for pointing that to you. These are, in essence, the questions and the observations that, to me, were also really new from Rav Soloveitchik. Take a look at the first selection here on your source. You'll notice the first selection here starts on page 4, even though the essay is even longer than this, but if you too quickly turn around, you'll cheat, you'll look on the back of your page, you'll see that the last one ends on page 22. So I've tried to summarize or highlight 18 pages worth of an essay in two sides of a sheet. So needless to say, inquiring minds should buy the book themselves and read it, and if you don't want to, I'm happy to Xerox the essay directly for you, but it's certainly good to read, because we're only going to get the Rashi Prak and the highlights here. Says Rav Soloveitchik right off the bat, like out of the box, he hits you with the question. It is self-evident that for the sake of the continuity of the Torah, after telling us about the creation of Adam, should have immediately related the story of the creation of Chava. And it, again, self-evident to him, now it's self-evident to us. Why didn't we go right in from Adam to Chava? Verse 7, which is the creation of Adam, should have been followed by, and Hashem said, it's not good for man to be alone. And then, that's not what happened right away, because what's actually in between those two things was the creation of the garden and the trees and the rivers. And then, once we've heard that it's not good for Adam to be alone, then without diverting from the story, the Torah should have immediately told us how God actually made the helper of Chava. In other words, says Rav Soloveitchik, Pasuk Yudches, verse 18, should have been followed by verse 21. So we should have basically gone from Pasuk Zayin to Pasuk Yudches to Pasuk Chaf Aleph, right? We would, and given the reality, that's basically hopscotch. But again, the wrong saying is, if logically, if you or I were writing the Torah, how would we have written it? That's exactly how any of us would have written it. We don't necessarily have to make it onto Oprah's book club. But I mean, this is like, you don't have to be a genius storyteller. This is like an obvious way to tell a story. The way it's actually told to us is very confusing. It hopscotches. As you're concluding, and only then, after concluding the story of the creation of man, of his being alone, of the emergence of Chava, then the Torah could have told us about the planting of the paradise in Eden, the God Eden, placing man there, the command to eat from all the trees except the tree of knowledge, Eitz HaDaas, and the observation of Pasuk Chaf Hei, of Yishneim Arumim, that they were naked. All of those are basically details that describe either the creation of the garden, their relationship to the garden, or the general situation there. All of that are nice, it's important, but it's really telling a second story. It's a different storyline. Thus, we would have been presented, said our salvation, I'm in the middle where the underline part is. We would have been presented with two completely continuous stories. The first one, the creation of Adam and Chava, and the second, the planting of the garden, man's assignment to reside and cultivate and watch over it, and the command not to eat from the tree of knowledge. But what happened? The Torah did not narrate these two stories in the manner we suggested. The Torah, so what, stop for a moment. What conclusion, therefore, do we reach? Right? If you were asked to do this in college and you're doing like literary analysis, so you might say, "Well, who, F, you know, you would fail. You would fail the writer, right? That's not an option when the writer is the Rabbanu Shlomo, right? So that forces us to reevaluate if logically, you know, and I'm still waiting for someone logically to disagree, but so far it seems to be pretty compelling that this does not really make sense. Why is order so hopscotched? Back forth. Tell me two stories. Good day. So, what conclusion do you reach from this? What's the only conclusion you can reach? Is that, despite the fact that we don't yet understand, but what must it be?
They have to have something to do with one another.
In other words, say sharper, it's really
one story.
And exactly what the Rav says. Next sentence, he says, the Torah did not narrate these two stories in the manner we suggested. Why? Because the Torah apparently tells us one story, with both narratives merged into one. Apparently the story can only be told in this fashion. The planting of paradise, the command, the naming of the animals are all relevant events which cast light upon and are relevant to the creation of Chava. The Torah had to tell us the story of the creation of woman in installments, advising us about other events that happened which are indispensable for understanding the drama of man. So he's laid out again when he asks some powerful questions, and he basically says, willy-nilly, we're forced, bal karcha, it must be that our, what we would say in learning is the Hanukkah was wrong. We're making an incorrect assumption. Obviously, it's one story. And in essence, what that must mean is that apparently, until we got the Chava, all those other things which we thought were diversions, apparently they're necessary for a proper and deeper understanding of Chava. Now, why is that so? Which is another way of saying, well, what is this proper understanding we're supposed to have? So that's not what we have to do. But at least he's set for us a game plan. Question?
What,
yes?
What if Chava is a result of his not being able to find Ezer Kenego from all the animals that came before him? In other words, Chava is as a result of it.
You're taking what Eliot said to its logical conclusion, which is that perhaps the reason that it had to wait is because until Adam realized that he had no other helper, he wouldn't have needed Chava.
The Chava is only as a result of his not finding an Ezer Kenego.
So therefore it had to tell us that.
And therefore...
Good, so what I'm saying is two things. Number one, that's fine, but you still be left with two problems. Number one, why does the Torah have to tell us all about the trees? That they were beautiful and they were delicious and you couldn't eat one or two of them. And the four rivers. All that description of the garden is still unnecessary according to you. And second of all, even according to that, what we don't understand is why in Pasuk, which one was it? Where is it? Lotov Heyos? Which one is that? My Shavu Brachos speech? Right. Which Pasuk is Lotov Heyos? Help me.
That's Yud Ches.
Yud Ches, thank you. Harry's been to a few Shavu Brachos in his day. The Rashbam. Verse 18, Pasuk Yud Ches. Why is that told us there? That should have laid it also. Because we didn't need to know that Hashem felt that way before Adam. Why do we need to know that? If according to you, the main, and I'm not disagreeing, that clearly, I think this is clear, that the creation of Chava is intentionally connected to Adam's realizing he needs the Chava. We're going to get to that in the shir. But we didn't need that preview beforehand from Hashem, did we?
But in your
chesed,
it's not referring to Chava. It's just saying a fact. It's not.
Why do we? Why is that fact told us here?
And then he brings the animals.
Again, but why not go then right into Chava then? If Hashem is saying it is not the same, Hashem is declaring an objective truth. What you're saying, which I'm not disagreeing with, is that part and parcel of the timing of Chava is not an objective need, but a subjective need. And you're saying, and I happen to agree with you, that that's crucial for the story, or for the lesson of the story, that Adam realized he needed. Right? But again, I think both the garden, the river, all those psukim, and even Yud-Ches are out of place. I think what you're saying is part of the answer, but I don't think it's the whole answer, because I think it leaves still too many things undone. Yes?
Like Adam was already working.
he was given the job of giving names already, but he was by himself doing it.
Right, that's correct.
And maybe would that work, plus also the stage set already with the plan to, you know.
So much work! He needs a
Good.
That's not a bad possibility. We'll see. Keep that in the back of your mind. I don't think that's going to be the full answer, but I think that that's going to be part of the answer. Yes?
I see the mirror image to that, that Adam is here, but even with everything he's given for us, the trees, for us, the work, and the animals,
he's still lonely. Right, so I'm going to try, we, and really meaning orthology is going to combine really, to a certain extent, both of what you're saying, he's going to combine them, and he's also going to have his own. Right, so a little closure of salvation, a little bit for the two of you. Okay?
You reconcile this with Caracalla and Zion. I said, remember we went through this.
This was last week. Okay, we're not going to reconcile this week.
No, we said Bar-Oyso is offered in a cave of Bar-Oyso.
Yes, 100%. Those are different descriptions. 100%. So a little bit we'll discuss that tonight. A little bit we discussed that previously. And a little bit we'll have to wait, because the rabbis and the Medrash, Chazal, already are sensitive to that. What's going on? Were Adam and Chava created simultaneously, or were they created separately, or consecutively? We did discuss this a little bit from last source. But we'll get to it again, and we may even leave it a little bit more for a third cheer. So let's begin now to see how our Soloveitchik tries to unravel this mystery. Take a look at your second selection. In the first chapter of Bereishis, the Torah tells us, so again, even though he asked all of his questions, again, let's just be clear, all of the questions we've asked are about Perek Beis and they stand alone. You don't need Perek Aleph to ask any of these questions. But he's not satisfied to give an answer just on Perek Beis. His answer about Perek Beis is going to take into account what is the purpose of Perek Beis. How do you know what the purpose of Perek Beis is? First, understand and contrast it with what the purpose of Perek Aleph is. So this is where we have to take a step back or two before we can then take our step forward. In Perek Aleph, he says, the Torah tells about the creation of male and female. Point number one. Of course, that chapter, Perek Aleph, is concerned mainly, and again, you'll note, I'm not going to stress it every time, but you'll see a common thread. This part definitely overlaps with what we saw last year from the Holy Man of Faith. This chapter, Perek Aleph, is concerned mainly not with man, but with the cosmos. The Torah mentions the creation of man, since the latter is part of the universe, and the story of the creation would have been imperfect if the Torah had omitted that man was also created. Point number one is, Perek Aleph is not at all about Adam. Period. Perek Aleph is about the creation of the universe, of the cosmos. Why is Adam mentioned? Because Adam is part of the cosmos. No better, no worse, but no better than any other part of the cosmos. If you want to have a full, complete picture of what Hashem created, what's the universe, that includes lots of things, including Adam. I just noticed that Alan's not here. Didn't he get me the water? Where'd he go? He must have gotten mincha. Oh, that was nice of him. He came and got me water and then left. Very nice. Okay. Is that him? Okay. The narratives about the creation of plant, animal, and man are almost identical. All three take into account the common origin of life, namely the earth. What is the upshot of all this from Perek Aleph? That the Torah believes that Adam formed an integral part of nature in the day of his creation. The idea of the naturalness of man served as a motivating force in Jewish ethics and metaphysics. Instability, insecurity, life and death, and helplessness and vulnerability of man are popular themes in the Nevi'im and Sefer Musar by extension. Just to give you a little bit of what I didn't include on the sheet, he points out that this is something that Christians have been very uncomfortable with. The Christians were very bothered by Perek Aleph and this idea that what is Adam? Just another piece of clay, another piece of dirt, just part of the creation? After all, don't we believe that human beings are elevated and above? And certainly, certain types, especially human beings in their theology, are completely, you know, removed from earthly components. So how could it be? What's going on? And he points out that, while we don't believe that's the whole story, that's why there's going to be a Perek Beis. But we're not insecure, we're not embarrassed, we're not running away from, we accept and we understand the Enechrami. That's part of the Musar of Perek Aleph. That man is part of nature. And in a sense, we're no different. We're born out of the same natural materials, the earth of the ground, like every other creature is. And in fact, that very point is part of some of the major hashkafos that we have, which is what he's alluding to before. When the Nevi'im are speaking, right, you know, me'afar l'afar, you know, from dust to dust, that whole notion that you have to do something with your life and that no one's here forever, and therefore that whole concept in Musar, that's based on this very natural approach to human life. Not some supernatural approach. But very natural. This is, you know, you got only, hopefully 120 years. You better do something with your life. From dust to dust. So we're not embarrassed by that. On the contrary, we embrace it. Of course, he adds. Of course. There's a distinctive element that's Tzelem Elohim. Again, we've given whole shurim on what Tzelem Elohim means. We're not going to review that now. But the bottom line is, of course, as much as we're the same, even in Perek Aleph, we're told, you're not identical with the rest of creation. Right? Even in Perek Aleph, where it's focusing on how much we have in common with nature, but it is mentioned that Adam is the Tzelem Elohim. There is something unique about man. And in fact, he says here, the central norm of our whole ethical system, our whole Avodas Hashem, is to be like Hashem. As we say, Mahu Afata, Mahu Rachum, Afata Rachum, we have to imitate Hashem. Reflect His image, become a divine being, live like a creature who bears resemblance to his maker. He points out, it's already hinted at in this sentence, and one of the sentences I didn't include, he basically says, Tzelem Elohim is not just a given. Tzelem Elohim is an aspiration. It's not just saying that you're human, by definition you have Tzelem Elohim. It's partially true, but what's equally and maybe even more importantly true is, that's the whole mission of your life. The goal of your life is to be worthy of being a Tzelem Elohim. Whatever was taka given to you as a gift of life, actualize it, develop it, become someone who really is in the image of God. Okay, so far that is his basic yisod with the purpose of Perek Aleph, to tell us about the creation of the universe. Happens to be that Adam is mentioned, because Adam is part of nature. But the focus really is of nature, and therefore to the extent that we are talking about Adam, it's Adam as a part, not apart from, but a part of nature. Okay, third selection, page 8. So when do we have this break? There is a break, he says now, between Adam, who starts off as part of nature, and then he starts separating from it. The break with naturalness and the functional biological immediacy comes to full expression only in Perek Beis. Perek Aleph, we're just part of nature. But in Perek Beis, which contains the story of man as unique being, whom the potential called Tzelem Elohim is in the process of realization. Perek Aleph is only potential. But in Perek Beis, the human being starts actualizing that potential, realizing it. In the second chapter of Perek Beis, we find man who sees the environment as something separate and foreign confronting him. He strives to attain the distinctiveness of an individual who represents not the species. He's not Adam as all man and every man, but Adam as a unique individual himself. How does he know such a thing? Who told him? How does the Rav know this? How does the Rav know this? So there's going to be a lot of proofs that he's going to bring to it. But the first one overlaps with something that we saw last week from Lonely Men of Faith. And that is that he makes a big deal out of the fact that we have different names of Hashem used. In all of Perek Aleph, as many times as God's name is mentioned, we only have which name of Hashem? Elohim, right? That's the only name that's used. The Yud-Kei Vav-Kei of Hashem is only used in the beginning, for the first time, only used in Perek Beis. What's the difference between Perek Aleph and Hashem and Elohim? So first of all, months ago in an earlier shir, we pointed out the Chazal and Medrash. The Medrash already knows this. The Medrash is the first to note it. The Medrash says that Elohim is Midas Hadin, strict justice, and Hashem is Midas Harachman. We pointed out that in the Lonely Man of Faith, Salvechik is basing himself on Rabbi Yehuda Halevi in the Sefer Kuzari, says something slightly different. And this is what he's repeating here, which we pointed out, I think, at the end of last week's year, that I didn't think was a contradiction. I thought it was very much connected, but an expansion on the Medrash. Not so much Midas Adin, Midas Arachman, but as Rav Yehuda Levi speaks about, Elohim is Hashem in his awesome, powerful, scary Hashem. But no relationship. He's like too intimidating that relationship with. Yudkei Vavkei, Hashem, is the intimate God that we can have a relationship with. The one who actually cares about us and that allows us to get it close enough to Him. That's, again, it's Rav Soloveitchik souped it up a little bit, but it's really based on Rav Yehuda Halevi, and I don't think it's so different from the Medrash of Midas Hadin versus Midas Harachamim. So that point here, Rav Soloveitchik, again, in light of this essay, he repeats that idea here. He says here, I wish to point out a certain variation in the second chapter, which is, in my opinion, corroborates the premise we have adopted. Elohim conveys to us the idea that Hashem is the Almighty, and he goes on all sorts of other adjectives which I left out, enormous, powerful, etc. Man's relationship with Elohim borders on impossible. What is man within the vast, uncharted lanes of the cosmos? Right? It says in Tehillim, right? Ma'anosh kitiskaren, right? David Abel says in Tehillim, like, what are we? What are human beings that Hashem should even care about us? If you want to think about the galaxy, right, then, I don't know, did David Abel know about black holes? I don't even understand what that means, but you know that, like, universe is, you know, quadruple the size of the universe that we know about are in these little black holes, and black holes bomb black holes. I mean, it's huge. So who am I? I'm less than a speck of dirt. Who am I? I can have a relationship with Elohim, the God of the cosmos? There's no relationship. I'm nothing. The whole picture changes, however, with the introduction of the name Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei of Hashem. That name is symbolic of the special, unique relationship between God and man. The name Hashem tells us that God communicates with man directly, not via the cosmos. Man relates to God as an I, as an individual persona who has seceded from the unbroken union of cosmic phenomena. This is why in the second chapter the name Hashem is used. It's a whole different relationship. When we're just part of nature, we don't have a relationship with Hashem, and therefore Elohim is used. In Perek Beis, all of a sudden there's a relationship with Hashem, and therefore that name. Again, this is the overlapping from last time. So, kumtoy sakasha, as we would say. Now comes a question. You have, on the one hand, Elohim, cosmos, creation of nature, Adam is just a detail in nature, no relationship. And then you have Hashem, intimate, wonderful, kind, we have a relationship. We're not just part of nature, we're our own reflective being. When did the change happen? So in the literary perspective, we're saying, well, one is more representative of Paragav, but more representative of Paragbeis. Now I'm asking you a literary shaila. I'm asking you Adam himself. If Rav Soloveitchik is essentially saying that these two dimensions occurred within Adam, when was the transformation? What critical event or events changed who Adam was? So, look what he says. Bottom of the first page. The question that then arises is, where is the critical boundary to be found? The line which separates cosmic man from persona. Again, just, you know, he likes to use these types, these archetypes. This is part of his, and especially his English writing, he used this a lot. Right? So don't be intimidated by the fancy words. Cosmic man means, he's talking about the cosmos, the universe, and Adam is just part of the details. Persona is the personal personality of Adam uniquely. So says of Soloveitchik, he thinks that in the Torah there are two turning points. Two transitions. Man in chapter 1, turning over the page, does not reach out for vastness and abundance. This is very, very fascinating to me, although it's not what we're going to focus on, so we're just going to kind of hit and run. We're going to hit this point and then move to the more important point. But the first thing he says is, this type of Adam, who's just part of nature, he's not a big dreamer. He's not reaching out to try to accomplish great things. He's not animated by some vision of what he wants to accomplish. He's just a person. Everything in the universe, right? Definition, science, right? The trees, the animals, everything by definition in science is limited by boundary. So is natural man, right? He's no different than any other part of nature. Only by discovering his own identity can man reject boundaries and long for the vastness, for having great dreams and accomplishments. Man persona, this is Perek Beis, wants to accomplish more and more. Man natura, Perek Aleph, is happy with whatever little that he achieves. So you'll say, what are we, egomaniacs? You know, who, you know, we should just be happy, you know? It's enough. You know, we should think that... No, says Rav Soloveitchik, emphatically, Judaism approves of the fantasy-aroused man persona. Hashem wants us to have great dreams. Indeed, point number one, getting back to some of the questions we started this year with, Hashem purposely planted the paradise for man. We had asked, why do we have to have the Vayita Bagan right away? Because the Gan represents this longing, these dreams. And that has to come right away because that is part of what Hashem wants Adam to have. Man is encouraged to build, to plant, to beautify his life, to enjoy his life as much as he can. And to just be, you know, hanging around? Who needs that? No, it's La'avdo, La'shamra. And have a beautiful, right? The Torah was added to way to tell us. We could understand why. Beautiful trees to look at. Delicious fruits to eat. Perek Aleph, Adam wouldn't have cared. And Perek Beis, he wants the finest. He wants the finest foods. He wants wonderful, goes a date if you can have it. What? Sometimes it comes at an expense that's not worth paying. If it's not kosher, it's not worth paying. If it means that you can't learn at all because you have to work 100 hours a week so you can afford the fine foods, then maybe that's a price that's too high to pay. Everything within reason. But the idea that we shouldn't want these great things, that's foreign. That's Adam of Perek Aleph. That's limited vision. Ooh, that's not what we subscribe to. That's only Perek Aleph. When you're just, you know, one of the details of nature. But if you're an individual, unique human being, So no two dreams are the same. You have your unique dreams. But unique dreams, you should strive for excellence in everything. You should have great things. He adds, even on this point, for all the great dreams we have, two horrible fears haunt man. One is the fear of nothingness or death. Another is the fear of ignorance. So he says it beautifully. He says, and that's why, what are the two trees that the Torah singles out in the middle of the garden? Eitz Hadas, knowledge. Eitz Hachayim. Because mamish, the whole life of man, symbolically, is centered around trying to defeat those two things. We can never have enough knowledge, and we can never have enough life. All of life is actually trying to outrun those two things. It's mamish, on one way or another, at the center of our existence. And that's why those two trees are in the center of the garden.
But he had those trees he already had.
You're getting ahead of us. We get ahead of us, okay? Lot. That may be before the end of the summer, or maybe halfway through the fall, Gene. But it's in future shurim. We haven't gotten. Good. You'll wait. Savlanut. And learning is a very important thing. I was at a Rebbe who told me in Gemara, but it's true about a lot of things. Most questions are answered if you just read a little further. You know, sometimes we read slowly. It's important not to read too fast, but it's also important. It's just like driving a car. Too slow is also dangerous. You got to know, you got to find the right tempo. Not too fast and not too slow. So, that's basically that point. Now let's get, I'm right in the middle, where after the three dots, after the ellipse, the more significant. So, again, there's more to talk about on this point, but he said that's one point where Adam changes from the two parakim, but now there's a second one, which is the more important one, which is the rest of the essay. The more significant turning point, however, is confrontation with Hashem's moral will, which resulted in the birth of a moral awareness. What really transforms Adam is when all of a sudden Hashem is, so to speak, talking to him and specifically commanding him. There's such a thing called right and wrong. After man had been placed in paradise in Eden, his fantasy began to aspire to unlimited existence. So you tell me, oh, you're supposed to have wonderful things. You're supposed to want beautiful, delicious things. And I'm putting you in the most delicious, beautiful garden. So he became a chazer. Wouldn't you? You want everything. Right? It's like putting a kid in a toy store or a candy store. Of course, he wanted everything. What did your mom tell you? If you eat too much candy, you get sick. All of a sudden, Adam wants everything, and suddenly he's met with Hashem's moral will that challenges man to stop, even if the fantasy tells him to move on. The final liberation of man from his environment, the transformation from natural to metaphysical, occurred with his first confrontation with Hashem. Again, let's remember, what's the big picture here? The big picture is we're asking the question. If it's true, as the Sefer Soloveitchik has said, that in Perek Aleph, Adam is just a part of nature, but in Perek Beis, he becomes separated and elevated above nature, how did that happen? Says the Soloveitchik, he gave us his first answer before, but now his second main answer, when did Adam become separated? When he became a mitzvah, when he became commanded, when he had a relationship with Hashem. Does anybody else in the garden have a relationship with Hashem? Only Adam. And it's not just now he has to listen to Hashem. Once he's Hashem talking to him and commanding him, all of a sudden he has this awareness that I'm different than everybody else, than everything else. And he points out, of course, in Pasuk Tezayin through Yudzayin, where we have the V'yitzav, right? Hashem is commanding Adam not to eat from this. Weren't there some rules in Perek Aleph? Peru, Revu, and Meluas, Aris, Bikiv, Shuha?
This is Vayvara.
And it says Vayomer. Right. Else says Vayomer. Vayomer, says Rosalvechik, is different than Vayitzav. And here I'm going to, for the sake of time, I'll paraphrase outside. But you take a look, it's so beautiful. What he says is, Vayomer was, of course, Adam had to, right? Many of the Rishonim say that the mitzvah to have children comes from that pasuk of Vayomer Baragalov. So what do you mean it's not a command? Why isn't that Vayitzav? So it says Rosalvechik beautifully. Vayomer and Baragalov was basically telling man what his natural urges were. So once Hashem is telling you that, you're going to feel like you got to do it. Right? It's like a parent who tells you something without saying you have to. But if they use the right kind of voice and they have the right kind of look in their eyes, you know that you better do it. It's in your best interest to do it. That was the Vayomer of Perek Aleph. Hashem is just telling you, letting you know, Adam, a natural human desire is to propagate, is to continue, is to have children. So you're going to feel like an instinctive human need to do it. But that's not the same thing as Hashem's moral will commanding you that it's the moral thing to do, whether you feel the need or not. That only comes with Vayitzav in Perek Beis. And that, ladies and gentlemen, says Rosalvechik, is a whole new dimension of existence. Now we live not just as a natural being. I have a natural urge to eat the fruit, I have a natural urge to drink the water, and I have a natural urge to have children. That's one level of existence. But Yitzhak is a whole other level of existence. There's such a thing as morality. There's a moral that I have to aspire to. Okay, we have two more selections. Now we're going to start getting into wrapping up. Again, with all this beautiful drush, he's going to start now tying it back into some of the questions we asked. Again, we asked the hopscotch question. What is going on at Perek Beis? But we have Adam created, then the garden, then he's lonely, then he's naming animals, and only then was Chava created. It looks like two stories, but they're interwoven somehow to be one. So that's, again, we're getting back to that now. It's coming, it's coming. We asked, why didn't it go right into Chava? Why not go right into Chava? Isn't that all one story, Adam, Chava? The first law of limitation was given to Adam before the emergence of Chava. No. This first Vayitzav, this first command, it had to be given to Adam, says Rav Soloveitchik, before there was a Chava. After man has been burdened with the ethical, he has these rules, he has these morals, only now Hashem Elohim decides to create Chava. Prior to being commanded, this natural man led a non-reflective existence in union with his nature. Hence he did not face a specific human problem by which this more personal dimension of man is troubled. What is that more personal problem that only Adam, as a reflective human creature, could be bothered by, that Adam, as just one of the parts of creation, would not be bothered by? Lo tov heos Adam levado. Loneliness. You're only lonely, says Rav Soloveitchik, when you have a sense of yourself and the uniqueness of you see yourself as just a natural being, a part of nature. There's this kind of nature, there's that kind of nature, and after all, we're all created from the ground, and that's Adam of Perek Aleph. He's mentioned because he's part of nature. So what's to be lonely? I'm surrounded by all sorts of things. We're all the same. We're all creatures. We're all natural beings. It's only now with the Vyitzav Hashem has commanded Adam, he has this awareness. Holy cow. Didn't say holy cow. There were no cows yet. Oh, actually, I guess there were cows. Probably still didn't say holy cow. There was no Indian yet, right? No Indians that said holy cow. All of a sudden, Adam said, well, oh my gosh, I'm different. If I'm different, who's like me? Once you're different, then you feel lonely. And he goes into here, I'm not going to repute it all now, I actually gave a Rosh Hashanah drasha about this 2 years ago, based on a Soloveitchik, the difference between being alone and being lonely. He gives the famous example, which I gave in that drasha, where you could be at Times Square with hundreds of people walking by every minute. You're not alone, you're with thousands of people. But if you don't know any of them, none of them know you, it can be a very lonely feeling. But if you got your thoughts, a good book, a good safer, whatever it is, watching the sunset, you're all alone on a mountaintop, you're all alone, but you don't necessarily feel lonely. Right? Alone is a physical phenomenon, either you're with other people or you're not. Lonely is a spiritual phenomenon. Either you feel, right, shalem or you don't feel. When you're not shalem, you're lonely. And that could happen whether you're with people or without people. It's a separate phenomenon. Says the Soloveitchik in the middle of the paragraph, it's only the personal man, introspective, meditating, who's experiencing estrangement from nature, who's lonely. The natural man may be alone. You have to be a self-reflective being. You have to realize that you're different in order to be lonely. That couldn't happen right away. First, Adam had to realize that he's different. And what creates the realization that he's different? As we said before, the Vayitzav. So he needed to have the garden, and he needed to have the command of what to do in the garden, because that Vayitzav is what, that's like the catalyst that started the dominoes. Then all of a sudden, Adam realizes that he's different. When he realizes that he's different, then all of a sudden he realizes that he's lonely. We know from the reading of Perek Aleph that Hashem made, a little bit for you, Dr. Sinsky, made God created male and female. But there, again, the pasuk doesn't spell it out. It's just like one creature altogether. There's no need for natural man to meet Chava, the woman, since he already is in the company of the female. For all practical purposes, that should be an S, would have made an excellent wife, right? A good shidduch. In other words, from a practical utilitarian perspective, the point was made before about, you know, there's so many things to do, the garden is so busy, and there's so many things to do in the garden, and so much work. So, says Rav Soloveitchik, that's what Perek Aleph was about. You're right, you can't be alone, because there's too much work to do. So natural man needed a good helper, needed a good chava. But that's all it was. Very basic, very practical, very utilitarian. However, something happened to man. This new man in Perek Beis is burdened with a new awareness. He's lonely and forsaken. And what he needed was not a practical partnership, but an ontological community. Ontological means the nature of being, going to your essence, to your panemius, where his lonely existence could find completeness, shlemus, and legitimacy. The female of Perek Aleph does not qualify. A new woman had to be created who, like man, changed into unique spiritual personality. So Chava is no better or worse than Adam and Perek Aleph. But the Chava of Perek Aleph is not enough for Adam and Perek Beis. That would not be a good Shech. He needed the new type of Chava for a new type of Adam. And finally, we're going to wrap it all up here. What is the main feature of this metaphysical spiritual Adam? The Torah gives us the answer in the story about the naming of animals. So we have one Shaila left. Why not just go right into Chava? Okay. Good, so you have the garden. We didn't understand why the garden came. Now we have to understand why the garden came. Because he needed the Vayitzav. But now that you have the Mitzav and Adam realizes he's lonely, so now go right into Chava. What's the one thing that's standing in our way? Naming the animals. So part of the answer, which we wanted to give, I said it, Ali said it, Gene said it, because we wanted him to realize he's lonely. But that is that a sufficient answer or not? So let's see what Soloveitchik suggests. The story appears to destroy this idea of the mentioning of the animals. It appears to completely destroy the unity and continuity of the tale about the creation of Eve. Are we going to get to Chava or not? Adam's alone, he's lonely. Then we got the animals, then we have Chava. We should have gone right into Chava. What's that interruption for? So let's again read the Pasuk. Let's read Pasuk Kaf again. What's Pasuk Kaf? Again, it's our point, but let's read it again inside. Vikra Adam Shemos, so call him Hema. Adam gave names to all the animals, Ofa Shemayim and all the birds, Ulachayas, Asada, wild animals in the field. And then, as we noticed, or Soloveitchik notices, right, we're good readers. Good haskama from the Rav. He also says it. What sticks out in this pasuk? It, like this ending is so jarring. Ula Adam lo matz. It's almost a tragic pasuk. If we didn't have anything more, the story ended here. If it was a commercial break now, it would be tragic. Ula Adam lo matz ezer kenegdo. Adam was lonely. There was no ezer kenegdo. So how does Rav Soloveitchik kite this? Look at the fourth line. The story. He says at the end of the third line, this sentence, this last pasuk, sheds light upon the link between this story and the emergence of Chava. The story about Adam giving names to all the cattle and fowl revealed to man the distinction between what he was prior to the command and what he became following it. In other words, he says, this Vayitzav objectively really shows Adam differently than everybody else. But perhaps Adam himself didn't really appreciate it. Now, we've all had that experience in life. Right, where everyone around us sees it, but it could be right in front of our nose, we're the last person to see it. So, true, says our salvation, if we're looking down, Vayitzav is the critical turning point. Adam's not just a part of nature if he's getting a commandment. But perhaps Adam himself did not fully appreciate just how different and therefore lonely he should be. So it's only after he goes through the whole process, we know it's already true. Lo tovios Adam levado, we know already ahead of time. But part of the human tragedy is that we're not always aware of the truth. Right? It's like we're watching this in slow motion, saying, die, die, you know? But sometimes the hero doesn't do what you want the hero to do. Baruch Hashem, here it happens. So what's the critical change? Adam is naming the animals, and when he names the animals, all of a sudden, you know, it's not just, as they say in Yeshiva, it's not just hair, it's the hair. He didn't just hear it, he really heard it. It became part of who he was. He really understood and he appreciated this difference. Adam names all the living creatures. What kind of performance is that? What is the whole point of Adam naming all the animals? Why did Hashem encourage him to do it? So he basically says it made him like a descriptive scientist, like a biologist. What's the purpose of a biologist or any other descriptive scientist? To introduce order into a chaotic world. Classify, to generalize. Right? These type of scientists are asking which question? The what question. Hashem wanted Adam to inquire into the whatness of the world from a descriptive viewpoint. When he begins to wonder what nature is and try to understand it, then all of a sudden he abandons the identity and unity of man and his environment and finds himself encountering it as a stranger and an outsider. Only once he starts classifying, okay, we got lions, tigers, we got geese, we got rabbits, we got trees, we got birds. What am I? You know, once he's got to start classifying things, he's got to ask himself, where do I fit in? At this point, man discovers in himself an incommensurability with nature. He views nature not from within, but from without. While Adam was busy describing, a great truth dawned on him. Objective observation is the source of our knowledge of the world. However, when it comes to man, observation alone will yield a very meager amount of knowledge. Man must confide in the person who is eager to understand him. Without confession, there can hardly be an opportunity to learn why, who, and what a particular individual is. Unbelievable. Part of the essence of being this reflective human being, we need to talk. And not just like the gab. This is not like an endless gossiping on the telephone thing. Although I guess it's connected to a certain extent. Human beings have a need to talk. We have a need to share. We don't become fully alive unless we can somehow describe and explain. Right, the whole premise of psychoanalysis rests on this notion. Right, now again, I don't know if he's saying that every human being has to have psychoanalysis. Although I was once at a conference where a psychoanalyst who happens to be a long time wife of a successful rav told hundreds of rabbanim in the room that she felt that by definition every rav needed to go to psychoanalysis. Not because we're all crazy, because you don't have to be crazy. Psychoanalysis, in her point, was that it's helpful. It helps you understand who you are. And there's nothing to be embarrassed about. Again, I thought she overstated it personally, but where she's coming from, I understand. The whole purpose of psychoanalysis is to help you understand where you're coming from. And you can't really understand where you're coming from, she said, unless you're having to share that with somebody else. Right? In learning, we say, if you can't explain it, you don't understand it. So if you can't explain who you are, why you do things, what your fears are, what your hopes are to somebody else, you don't really have, you're not in touch with yourself. I don't know if she knew this essay, but if I tell her about it, she might start quoting it. This is certainly supportive of the premise that she was working with. The end of she eats much, she got smudged. They all got smudged! Yeah, I got smudged before I said it. I'm sorry. I hope we can all make this out. Let's see what I can figure out. Oh, I got the book. Okay. Yeah, but it'll be longer because I have all my ellipses here. Let's see if we can figure it out without the book. We saw that. There can hardly be an opportunity to see why what a particular person is, etc. He must reveal himself. So then, okay, I'm not sure what the end of that sentence is, but if you skip down, there is no depth to nature. It is a flat, two-dimensional reality. Right? There's no this self-reflection, this depth, this third dimension, three dimension, 3D, is nothing about nature. However, man, what's the third dimension of man? The inner world. In order to escape his loneliness, he had to meet, I think that's Chava, he had to meet woman/mystery, I think is what it says. He needed to meet someone who has the same inner life, the same awareness of themselves. They have a lot in common, otherwise Eve would not be a helper. There's no comparison between Adam and Chava, there's no help. However, they're also different. The existential differences are incommensurate. Man and women differ not only physiologically, as male and female, of whom the first account of creation, Parak Aleph, tells us, but also spiritually and personality-wise. That is the way in which the Creator has ordained the lonely human destiny. Right, this notion that, and we speak about this all the time in the various Hashkafic contests, and the Rav embraces fully, the notion that the differences between men and women are not just the obvious biological ones. That, again, we're stereotyping all men and we're stereotyping all women. And obviously, real life is complicated in both directions. But there's a general truth, says Soloveitchik, much Chazal to back him up, that there's a spiritual and psychological and existential difference between Adam and Chava, and by extension, therefore, men and women. On the one hand, we have certain commonalities, but on the other hand, if we were carbon copies of each other, we wouldn't need each other. Man and woman have to be like a puzzle. There's supposed to be those differences, or else, what's the point? This is if you're too discommon, right? This is the puzzle of Big Ben. This is the puzzle of the Golden Gate Bridge. Those two puzzle pieces are not going to make anything, right? There has to be some basic commonality. But if they both have the exact same flat space or the exact same indentation, they're not going to fit either. Right? Where one is a little bit indented, the other has to be sticking out a little bit. It's like a puzzle, not too dissimilar and not too similar, just the right balance. So, he throws this in at the end. It's a very important Hashkafic piece in general. But again, just to review and wrap it up, we started off with these questions of the hopscotching order of Perek Beis. And our basic two questions were, number one, once we hear about Adam, why don't we go right into Chava? And number two, once we know that Adam is supposedly lonely, and therefore we expect Chava to come immediately, then we have the naming of the animals. What's that all about? And basically, our short answer was, two types of man, in a certain sense. Man is just part of nature, not self-reflective, not spiritual, not a commanded. This is a part of nature, not a big dreamer. Then comes along Vayitzav, and says there's an objective reality in Perek Beis, with Hashem versus Elohim, names. It's a personal relationship because you're a self-reflected. You're a commanded being. Not everyone else is commanded. But maybe Adam didn't himself realize that. That's the objective transition. When does Adam realize it? When he's naming all the animals. That's why the garden had to come right away. Because that had to distinguish Adam from the garden objectively. Once that happens, he's naming everything, he's classifying it. Then it's not just objectively true, but subjectively Adam realizes that he's lonely. And then he needs Chava. And the whole notion of loneliness, never forget. Loneliness is a spiritual adjective. Spiritual state. And loneliness is only there for someone who is self-reflective. You could have people who you and I might look at them and say, they sure are probably lonely. And sometimes the reason that they're not lonely is not because there's really more in their life than we know about. No. They really got nothing going on, Nebuch. But they have to not be reflective people. They're somewhat obtuse. They're more... So if you're not reflective, you don't have a sense of self, certain spiritual sophistication, you're not going to be lonely. Loneliness takes a certain self-awareness to realize I'm me and there's all this around me, but I don't have a place, I'm not shalem, I'm not happy, etc., etc., etc. But the first base is you have to have a self-awareness. You don't have a self-awareness until you realize you're not just a part of nature. You're part of nature, but you're also a part from. Not just a part of, but a part from. You're separate and distinct. And only once that happens through the classification and the naming of the animals, Adam realized that he was lonely. And then he was ready for Chava, which as the Rav says so beautifully at the end, someone who on the one hand was like, but on the other hand, a little bit unlike, to make not just the same, but complementary whole, to make that fit so that it would really be shlemus, so there wouldn't be this not only alone, but more than not being alone, more importantly, Adam wouldn't be lonely. Okay. Anyone who wants to stay to ask questions, I'm happy to stay, but since I don't want to hold you too late, so anyone who has to go, certainly feel free to leave. Emirat Hashem, we'll pick up with the continuation of this beautiful and challenging story next week.